The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 469. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this installment of the PVD Cast. I pride myself on being transparent with my show, and I must confess that I had a guest lined up. And unfortunately, due to some personal situations, that individual had to cancel on me, and we have postponed their appearance. But unfortunately, that leaves me without any content for this week, and so I decided to do something a little different. I went back into the archives of not the PVD Cast, but the archives of my sister podcast, Matt Talk. If you're unaware of what Matt Talk is, it is a show that myself and Three Geeks podcast member Jason Taylor do, highlighting and celebrating the 1980s version of Matlock. And we've done it for several years. We kind of worked our way through the various different seasons. We're currently about 25% into season six, so we have still a few more seasons to go. But we do it the second and fourth Sunday of every month, and it's been fun, and it's been well received, and we love doing it. And so when I realized that I wasn't going to have a guest for this episode, that I would go back into the archives of that podcast and grab what I must say is a personal highlight for myself, and I think I could speak for Jason as well and say he seconds that notion. A few years ago, we got the opportunity to talk to none other than Nancy Stafford, who played the role of Michelle Thomas on Matlock for a number of years. And it was such a delightful conversation and a cool one that I thought, hey man, if I got to go into the archives, if I got to go into the vaults, I'm going to pull this one out because I think it's a great one that people are going to enjoy, whether they're a fan of Matlock or not. So I'm not going to waste much time. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Matlock's Nancy Stafford. Ladies and gentlemen, Matlockers and Matt Talkers alike, it's John, I'm with Jason, and we are so excited to bring you this episode of Matt Talk. Joining us is the powerhouse behind, is the lady behind the great Michelle Thomas. Nancy Stafford, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I love that intro. Thank you for finally recognizing the power of Michelle. So good to see you guys. Wonderful to be with you, John and Jason. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy that you joined us, and I love how the cast of Matlock has embraced our show, because we've had Lori Lathien on, we've had on Linda Pearl, and now we get to talk to you, and this is super exciting.
Oh, that's so great. Well, thank you so much.
We thank you for taking some time out of your hectic schedule to sit and chat with us as well. We do really, really appreciate it. Let's start off with maybe a quick question about your background. How did you get started in acting?
Very much by accident. This is my second career. I was a journalism grad from the University of Florida, and my first career was in journalism and PR. And it happened to be during the Screen Actors Guild strike of 1981 in Miami, Florida, where none of the real professionals could work. And I got a phone call from an agent one day, frantic, desperate. do you think you could maybe come down? I'm desperate. I need your help. And I said, well, thanks for thinking of me if you're so desperate. And I had been Miss Florida the year before in Miss America. So that's how she even made the connection to call. And she said, would you just come down and audition for some commercials? We have these big ad agencies in New York who come down and cast these commercials, and we don't have anybody to put on tape. So that's how it started. I went down as a lark in between my PR jobs, and I auditioned for 5 commercials in 1 week, and I got them all, and thought that's always how it worked. That just, you audition, that just means you get it. And that's how it started, with commercials and then some modeling, and then moved to New York and studied acting to see if I could do this thing. And from there, it went on to a daytime series and then came out to California.
How was the transition going from Florida to New York and then out to California? I imagine different types of cities that you were in that certainly had its own personalities to it. Did you find it to be difficult to move from one place to another, or was it pretty easy for you?
No, you're right. You're very right, John. It was very hard. I was youngish. I was not that young. When I got to New York, I had grown up in Florida, so it was very familiar to me and cozy and comfortable. New York was a whole nother ballgame, and I went there alone. I mean, I was completely a fish out of water. I didn't have any connections. I purposely didn't tell anyone I was coming because I knew I would be distracted if I started working, because I had a lot of clients there. So I just came and entered into school 8 hours a day and was just studying at Stella Adler Conservatory. But I was very lonely. It was very hard. Finally, when I got a phone call from Eileen Ford from Ford Modeling Agency back in the day, and she said, who are you? I don't even know who you are, but I got your number. You better get in here. I got people calling me looking for you. And when I went to meet her, she looked me up and down and so sweetly and kindly said, oh man, you're really old, but you're going to make me a lot of money. This was the modeling agency. So she said, I'll sign you. I was 24. I was really old. So then I started working a lot and got busier, and that helped. And by the time I left New York, which was about 3 years later, I loved it. And I didn't, then LA was trepidatious for me. I didn't really know anybody there. I was flown out to screen test for a number of pilots for TV shows. I went to network a couple times, but I didn't get anything. But everyone kept telling me, but you're going to network, that's good. And I went, oh, okay, that's good. So there seemed to be enough interest, and my soap had been canceled. So I came out to LA again, knowing nobody. So in each town does have its own personality and challenges. But I've been here now for 30 some odd years, and this feels like home to me.
That's awesome. So your first big role was on St. Elsewhere, and you worked with some juggernauts. So juggernauts now, Howie Mandel, Ed Begley Jr., David Morse, William Daniels, Denzel Washington. Like,
yeah.
What was that experience like?
Well, we didn't cross paths that often in our scenes, but he was a powerhouse. They all were. I mean, these are amazing characters and talents. But he always had, you always knew he was destined for something huge. And he was he's just like he is now. He was classy. He was smart. He knew what he was doing. He knew where he wanted to go. And it was amazing. Howie was just what you'd expect. Laugh a minute. Stephen Firth was the same thing. He was hysterical. And we cannot forget, of course, my love interest on the show, the handsome doctor. Surgeon Mark Harmon, who was, you know, for 3 years we were a love interest on the show together. So that was fun. It was fun going to work every day.
I had never sat down and looked at the cast of St. Elsewhere. It's pretty impressive.
It is. And you know what, guys? I felt completely, I was so honored and humbled to be on that show. I was a brand newbie. I mean, I was my first primetime anything. I had only done a soap in New York and commercials. And here I audition and get this Emmy-winning show with this cast of, you know, Tony winners and Emmy winners and amazing people. I felt completely out of my depth, but they were all so kind and very generous to me. And I will forever be grateful to Bruce Paltrow and Mark and John Tinker and all the others that were affiliated with that show for seeing something in me and letting me come play with them.
I just was going to make a quick comment back when you were talking about your run-in with Ms. Ford, 24 years old.
Oh my gosh, I was ancient. I was ancient.
That blew me away. Nancy, me away.
But that is the age that her girls were generally retiring. She let me know that. But she was going to take a big chance on me, for which I was grateful.
So what's it like? You go into Matlock and you play Karen Nelson on The Seduction. And then you eventually become a regular. But what is that first experience like going in as a special guest?
I love being a guest star. It's nerve-wracking because you're walking into a family that already has the dynamic in place and everybody knows who they are. And there's a tone on every show that is set always by the lead actor and the production. And I've done a lot of guest starring. So I'm very cognizant of being a good guest star in the sense of not only just preparing and knowing what I'm doing, but also feeling the room, intuiting how to behave, what's cool, what's not. A lot of guest stars get very nervous and they, you know, breeze into the makeup trailer when the lights are low and the music is soft. And like, that's your first cue. The people in the trailer like it quiet in the morning at 5 a.m., but a lot of guest stars will burst in out of nerves. You know, they'll just go, "Hey, how's it going?" Yeah. And you're like, "Oh my goodness, can I take you aside and save you from, you know, getting a crook on your neck and being sent home?" But again, it was such a wonderful, welcoming environment on Matlock. And Andy is amazing and was that first meeting and first time. I was not a nice person on that show.
Really? I don't believe that.
You know, I thought I was nice. However, my behavior was a little questionable. Your listeners may not remember The Seduction as well as I do, or you guys know. I played a high class call girl. That's kind of a nice way to put it. But I perjured myself on the witness stand and framed somebody for murder. So what's the big deal? You know? And, but I'm of course found out at the end. And, so when that show ended, I enjoyed it so much, had a great time with everyone, but then went off to go do whatever I was going to do next, which happened to be another TV series for Disney and ABC called Sidekicks. And it was a sweet little half hour, Friday night, half hour family show. I loved it, wished it could have gone forever, but it didn't. It lasted a year because they put us on at a terrible time slot. But 9 o'clock on a Friday night for a sweet little family show didn't work. So we got canned after a year. And just so happened that that was the time that our mutual friend Linda, who I adore, had left the show, and they were now looking for Andy's new sidekick to be his new law partner. And during the time, actually, I was already shooting Sidekicks. And what's interesting is that I only had 1 week off that entire season. We shot, 21 episodes? 1 week. I didn't happen to be in the show. 1 week. And that was the week my agent called and said, "You've been offered a guest starring role on this show called Matlock. It's a new show called Matlock." And I said, "What? I've never been offered anything without auditioning. Are you sure it was an offer, a straight offer?" "Yeah, it's an offer." So if I hadn't had 1 week off and gotten that one episode as a guest star, I would not have been on their radar a year later when my show got canceled and there was an opening to be his co-star. So I am ever grateful, and I just love how things work out.
We're going to get to season two. John and I were going through each episode in order on the show and reviewing them. And when we got to season two, I was like, all right, so we're switching up the assistant. And because John and I really liked the Keen and Matlock element in season one, and we felt like some of the chemistry with him and Linda was just a little off. It just, something felt missing. And then we watched season two, episode one, and I said it in the review. I said, "This is what the show's been missing." because something about the two of you clicked. I don't know if it's because you weren't his daughter on the show, but just something that, with the two of you worked really, really well.
Thank you. You know, honestly, I felt the same way. I loved working with him, and it was easy, and we had an instant rapport. But it very well could, as you say, could have been the freedom of not being a daughter. You know, maybe because honestly, you know what? So many people through the years have thought I was his daughter. They said, oh, you're his daughter. I go, no, I was actually not his daughter. The first one was his daughter, and the one after me was his daughter, but I was not his daughter. And they said, but you seemed more like his daughter. And that's how I felt too, so much of the time on the show. I think we did have a great chemistry. No explaining it except that Andy was wonderful and kind, and we just genuinely loved each other.
Because we, like I said, during season one, we would always miss Keen when he wasn't in the episodes. And, you know, for personal reasons, Keen wasn't in a lot of season two, at least not that we've watched so far. But we don't miss him like we did in the first season because you guys are so good together.
Thank you so much. Well, he added so much. And I don't remember if he, I don't remember when Clarence came aboard. Was it season three?
Season three is when Keen leaves.
Right.
Yeah.
It's towards the tail end, I believe, of season three is when there's a switch that's made between Keen and Clarence.
Him and Clarence. Yeah. Well, I loved both of them. But they had a very different dynamic, too. I mean, as you're getting more familiar with the season three shows, you'll see a very different dynamic with Clarence, who was charming and funny and kind of adorable sort of thing, whereas Kenny really was more, he was funny as all get out, but he was tougher. And it was, so there was a very different personality, which, and both of them served the show, I think, very, very well.
Agreed. So did you have any inspiration for crafting the character of Michelle Thomas? Did you pull from, you know, previous experience on other shows or maybe actresses that you emulated? Like, how did you find the character? How did you define that character, of Michelle Thomas?
Well, the first thing I did was call my brother, who's an attorney. And I just said, okay, walk me through this. He was not a litigator, but or a defense attorney, but it was extremely helpful. I actually then also went to see some trials and just sort of sat in the gallery and watched what was going on. But I also loved, I took, frankly, a lot of the inspiration from Andy himself. I only got to, I think I only actually got to present a case. It's the only time I think I actually had my solo case might have been one show called The Witness. I may have had another time or two where I may have presented a little bit, but that was really my show. But I really kind of stole some of Andy's wily ways, crazy like a fox kind of ways. But I also had watched, you know, LA Law was running, and it was some of these kind of a very different tone than Matlock. So I felt like I could get away with a lot more folksy, kind of crazy like a fox. How can I trip somebody up on the witness stand and that kind of thing? So can I just tell you, your viewers, your listeners, one thing they may just absolutely flip over, because as you know, Andy makes everything look easy. I mean, he's a guy who was so good at what he did. He made it look so easy, effortless. It was, but every bit of it was very orchestrated, and he knew exactly what he was doing. But in the courtroom, we shot, I think a typical episode was about 8 days. It takes 8 days to shoot the show. Three of which, or sometimes three and a half, were in the courtroom, in that big climactic scene at the end of the show, is the big courtroom scene where it's all revealed. We were in court for at least 3 days. Andy would, at the very end, where he did his big summation speech, where he, you know, comes in and he addresses the jury and the judge and the defendant and the gallery and the prosecution table, he's dead center right in the middle of the room, and he presents his entire summation speech. Well, he did that 99.9% of the time in one take. It was so crazy that he would just start, and it, at least the master, they'd get the master shot first, which is the big shot that you see everything in the whole room. And he would start and he would just go for it. And he knew it so well and was so interesting and so captivating. And I don't know how long those scenes ran on camera, but I bet you they were 7 minutes of him just talking. And at the end, invariably, what would happen is he'd get a standing ovation. They'd say, cut. And crew stands up and claps. Everybody in the whole room is clapping. There were people that would come down from the offices from the big black tower at Universal Studios. I mean, it was he was amazing to watch.
Well, let's go to a couple of questions that we received from some folks here.
I've got one right here, John.
You got one? Go ahead. Go ahead,
because we're kind of here. So Paul Manning and Val Morris asked very similar questions, so I'm just going to read them back to back. Paul Manning asked, you first played a guest star on a couple episodes, and then the following season became Michelle. Were you surprised that you were asked back as a regular? And then the other one is, did you enjoy being a CD character as a guest or as Wholesome Michelle as a regular? From a character standpoint.
I loved them both. I loved being the CD character. Because, but I'm glad it was a guest star. I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have enjoyed that for five seasons. And the reason I liked it was I was very hesitant to take the show. Here's this really despicable one who is like, you know, seducing Andy Griffith, perjuring herself on the, I mean, that's like, really? And behaving so badly. And that, but then I realized, you know what? I can approach this completely differently. And instead of just glamorizing her seductiveness, I can show her brokenness. That's what I decided to do. And I think that was part of what struck them about, wow, maybe there's something more to her than just some sexy thing that is a bad guy, a one-note bad guy. So I enjoyed both very much, but I absolutely loved Michelle. And I loved finding her nuances and different things through those five seasons. The fact that she could never get a man. I mean, poor Michelle. That was Andy's thing. He finally kept, they kept bringing me love interests that were horrible. And I, you know, it just never worked out. And then Andy finally started end up saying in the script, I think he added it, but he's like, poor Michelle, she just can't get a man. So, but I did love that woman. So, yeah.
That's and not I forget fair. What the, but- Linda Pearl had a new one every episode, and they couldn't
I don't know if it was me. I don't know what it was, but it never worked out for poor Michelle.
All right, let's.
Did I miss one of those other questions?
No, you nailed
you got
it.
Them both. Yeah.
Go ahead, I will say one other quick thing, John, before you pop in. The question about was it hard. Was it weird going from a bad guy to the you know, Wholesome Michelle? So that is a question I actually asked our producers the first day I'm on set, and very nicely. But I said, you know, aren't your viewers gonna like wonder? Wait a minute, weren't you here like last season, and weren't you in prison? And and they both, this sadly, it kind of shows you what producers think of their audience, but. They all wave their hand away and say, no, nobody will ever notice. Well, that is probably my number one question through the years has been, wait a minute, weren't you that seductress that, you know, purged herself? So I just explained it that while she was in prison, she went to law school. She funny. Got her degree.
Actually, I have a follow-up. So your first episode on the show was in London. How does London mm-hmm. know to call Ben Matlock in Atlanta, Georgia?
I remember. That's a very good question. But I think I remember that the person who either was our victim who died or somebody was a friend of Andy's from the States. And I think it was his son who was being charged with the murder, which I guess is how he got involved. But how I got involved, that's what I really don't remember. Well, I mean, was I with the big law firm that was Curtis Hanley?
You were the attorney for one of the big wigs that was a suspect for a while. So
we
love to joke about it that Ben Matlock's so darn good at his job, people from other countries will call him. You know, so
that's right.
You know.
Oh man, if there'd been one final like 10th season, wouldn't it have been fun if every episode he's in another country?
Yes.
That would have been funny, from everything from like Belize and Nice, France to you know, Kenya. He could have gone global.
Like, I wish they had done the movie of the week thing after the show ended, like they did with, you know, Murder, She Wrote forever.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I thought it would have been perfect to do that. It would have just been three, and they could have continued the wheel. Remember they did that wheel for a while of Columbo, and
yes.
Was it Murder, She Wrote, or Diagnosis, and then Us. We could have been on the wheel where we only had to do like three movies a year, mm-hmm. or four. That they didn't ask me.
Well, here's another question from one of our listeners. Sadie Saunders Keener has asked, what do you think about how popular the show still is, and does it register with you just how many people love this show?
Aw, thank you, Sadie. It does register with me, and I love being reminded of it. Thank you. I think that the reason it is still beloved, well, first of all, it has Andy Griffith in it, who is an American icon and, you know, will forever be Andy of Mayberry and Ben Matlock in our hearts. So it's got that huge, wonderful American icon. But also, I think it harkens back to a gentler time when it was where the bad guys got caught. Ben was adamant about being only representing people that he knew and believed were innocent. I don't remember the episode title, but there was one show that he found out partway through that that our defendant was really actually guilty, and he had taken it on, and he was successfully, you know, prosecuting or defending the man in trial. And he found out mid-trial that the guy was actually the murderer. And he chose to, I don't remember if he actually lost purposely or if he somehow allowed evidence to be found by the prosecutors, because he did not want this guy to walk. And I mean, that's, that kind of integrity is just not seen that much anymore. So I think there's that. I think there's the comfort of a formula show like we were. It was a distinct formula, just like Murder, She Wrote, just like Diagnosis, just like Columbo. People knew what to expect. And I think there's a lot of comfort in that. It's a closed-end mystery, so you didn't have to you weren't binging. You didn't have to watch an entire season to stay up to speed on the show. And you can come in and out of it. But I think it was a gentler time. And I'm very grateful for it. You know what amazes me? I'll go on college campuses and I will walk into the student union, and they'll have TVs on, or kids will be watching on their laptops. And you know what? They're watching Matlock. And I've asked a couple of them, what in the world are you doing? You're watching an old people show. And they go, we love it. He's like our grandpa. And they just like being able to identify with these characters. And I think the sweetness of it is appealing in a time when we're so edgy. Everything's like working so hard to be as edgy and out there as possible. Mm-hmm. Here you got a show that is really about doing the right thing and characters who really care for each other.
I think we should reboot Matlock with you and Linda Pearl. I've been talking about it on the show. I think that'd be amazing.
I've been thinking about it for years, actually. And I've actually talked to a couple of our producers from back in the day, the creators, neither of which are interested in doing it, but because they've moved on with other things. But I don't know. I haven't talked to Linda about it. She and I, you know, I had to have had a scene with her that first season, but honestly, I don't remember it if I did, because we didn't really, our characters didn't really cross paths. But I had the joy of getting to work with her finally after all these years. A year ago, we both did a movie during COVID in New Mexico and then here in LA last November and December. And we played best friends. And it was so fun to finally get to know her and hang out with her. So I may actually try to talk to her about that.
Because if you can get her or Bren Thayer on board, you can still name the show Matlock.
I know. And but, right. And then and we can get, maybe we can get Clarence to come back. He's still around. And I don't know who else. I don't know if Julie, I haven't been in touch with Julie Summers, the prosecutor, in ages. So I don't know, but it's a good idea, Jason.
I think it is. And I mean, Keen Holiday is next to impossible to get a hold of. So I don't know if you could get him, but yeah.
It'd be fun. I think we should. And Daniel Roebuck, we could get Daniel because I do know him quite well.
So Gio Howell wants to know, what was it like working with Andy Griffith and Don Knotts?
Oh my gosh, the best days ever. They were the most incredible days on set when they both worked together. It was party central as far as just the minute they got in each other's presence, they started and they had this shortcut vocabulary and they would just start riffing and they'd start cutting up and it was hysterical. It was unbelievable. They never stopped. They adored each other. It was evident. They remained, as you all know, dear, dear friends until Don's death. And on the days that Don would work, we shot at Universal Studios in the big, big, big. If any of your listeners have been to the Universal lot and gone onto the studio lot, you know, you have those tram trips and they take you all over the sound stages in the back lot where Andy's house actually was. And so, but the big black tower is where all the executives are on the Universal lot. And I mean, we're talking the network executives, the head of, you know, NBC and the head of whatever, and the head of all the shows. Well, when word got out that morning, any morning, that Don Knotts was on the call sheet and he was going to be working, the elevator would get jammed because people would be coming down out of the Black Tower from their executive suites to come onto our soundstage. Scott Bakula worked on Quantum Leap at the stage next to us. He would come over and all these people from all over this entire studio lot would sneak in and they'd all hide in the flats on the side, you know, in the dark, just to watch these two in action. And that it never disappointed. They were always hysterical. And it was an absolute sheer delight. I felt like I was sitting in on history every single time. And Don was the loveliest guy. Some of your listeners may not realize that he was incredibly shy, very, very formal. You know, every time I saw him, he would do a slight little bow and, oh, Nancy, it is so good to see you again. Yes, quiet, shy. And then as soon as the cameras rolled, he'd turn right back into that little bumbling kind of over-the-top character that he was on Matlock, as well as, of course, the Griffith Show. But it was a joy.
Jason, do you have any other questions from some of our listeners?
I have just two more things. Okay. One, Carolyn Collins just wants me to let you know that she loves you. And
I love you, Carolyn. Thank you so much, sweetie.
And Jeremy Glass wants to know about when you left the show. What was maybe some of the reasons you left, or what was happening? Was it the move to North Carolina?
It was the move. We had, here's what's crazy. The show had been a workhorse for NBC for years and years and years. But we got canceled. The network thought we skewed gray. Was their term. And they were running demographics that were 18 to 24 year olds. And that wasn't us. So we knew the writing was on the wall, like a couple episodes by the end of that sixth season. But then when it was announced that, gee, yeah, we have been canceled, even though we're in the top 20. I mean, so, so sad. But ABC then came up to the plate and they said, okay, well, we'll pick it up. But in order for us to do that, you need to shave off $500,000 per episode from your budget, which prompted the move from California to North Carolina, which Andy was thrilled about. He lives there. and had wanted to move the whole production for years, had been lobbying to try to do that. And it fell on deaf ears, but now he had a chance to do that and to indeed save a lot of money. And I had just gotten married the year before for the first time. I'm a 35-year-old gal who had just gotten married. And so I thought, you know what? I've loved this. This has been a great ride, but I'm not going to wait till I'm 35 to get married for the first time and then go do a TV show in another state. So that's when I left the show. It was hard. It was hard. But anyway, they had what, four more successful years after that, or three?
Little did they know that little 6-year-old to 12-year-old Jason Taylor in Columbus, Ohio was watching it.
Wow. Were you really as kids?
I loved the show. One, I like procedural dramas like this. Yeah. I love the lawyer shows. And I'm not trying to be a stereotype, but I watched it with my grandma a lot. But
no, that is so sweet. I love that because it builds memories. You have memories with your grandparents watching these shows together.
Yeah, I would be lying if I didn't say I had pretended to be sick a few times because I wanted to catch the replay of the second episode or second part of an episode because there was a cliffhanger.
I will say as a kid, I remember the show, but I didn't watch it. To be honest, Nancy, I was more of like I discovered it 5 or 6 years ago on MeTV and kind of exactly as you said, that nostalgia factor of like, man, this is a simpler time. This is good. It's different than everything else I'm watching. And that's how I became a fan.
I'm so thrilled.
Yeah. So, you know what?
Every now and then I'll catch a rerun myself. Every now and then I'll see an episode as I'm flipping through or if I'm traveling in a hotel room and I'll watch it and I will actually be stunned and say, you know what? This was really good. This was good. And I think when you're so close to something and just every day you're going to work, you know, you forget that now, however, 30 years later, 20 whatever years later, that it still holds up, which is why we're in syndication still so heavily and why you guys are such loyal and gracious fans and why you've got these wonderful fans who are writing in. And I could not be more grateful to all of you.
I think that if this show was on streaming, because so far it hasn't been, it's on Pluto TV. I think if this show hits streaming, the chances of that spinoff we were talking about, I think would grow. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be really surprised with the interest.
You're starting to this, would. Aren't you?
we go to cons regularly, and John and I always, because this our podcast started because the guys on our other podcast would tease us about watching, like you said earlier, a grandparent show. And John and I really liked it. So what we started doing, just to annoy the rest of the podcast, we would ask people when we did live shows, like, who watches Matlock? Who's heard of Matlock? And you'd be surprised at the responses we got.
Wow. From all ages?
All ages.
Or just, wow. I love it. And you know what, Jason, you said it when you said you watched it with your grandparents. And I meet people all the time, that either their grandparents or their parents, they watched it together. And it builds sweet memories. So I think that's part of that nostalgia thing you were talking about, John.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something else real quick, if you will. We don't want to keep you all night here. You have written several books. So what made you decide to try your hand at being an author?
My first career was writing. And I had put it aside. I journaled all the time. But, you know, I wasn't writing professionally anymore. I was after Matlock, I guest starred on a bunch of stuff, but nobody was knocking down my door offering me the next series. Things had really changed in the industry. And some of the stuff that was out there that my agent would send me, I'd go, no, I don't really, I'm not that interested in that. But I got offered a show that I did. I was hosting, which I very reluctantly took. A fashion magazine show. It was a lifestyle magazine, fashion trends, beauty magazine show that was on CBS for 10 years. It was the longest running show on CBS that nobody ever saw. I mean, nobody saw this show. It was syndicated. It was on CBS O&Os, meaning owned and operated. And we were syndicated all over, but we ran at like crazy hours in LA, Chicago, and New York. We ran at 7:00 PM. It was a great time slot. Everywhere else, we were on in the middle of the night, Only insomniacs ever saw this show. But it was a wonderful show, and I loved hosting it. One day, the producer called me, first year in, and he said, hey, I know you've written before, and you care about women. You care a lot that they know how special they are and unique they are and beautiful they are. You care about their inner beauty, whatever that is. This is a beauty show. He says, I want you to write a column. We've got a new website going up, and I want you to write a column. And now they call that a blog these days. But anyway, it was a column. And he said, I don't know, call it Nancy's Notebook. I said, okay. And he said, write whatever you want. I said, really? You really mean it? I can write what I want? He goes, yeah. So I started writing Nancy's Notebook, which was funny and winsome. But I also wrote about what real beauty is about, that it's not just the stuff you wear and how you do your hair and all the makeup, but it really emanates from inside. But because it was funny and poignant, I mean, I would actually quote Bible verses, but I'd paraphrase it and say, a wise man once said, you know, it's more important to look at the heart instead of what the outward appearance. Well, a publisher, long answer to your question, John, but a publisher started reading Nancy's Notebook and called me up. For 6 months, he kept saying, you got to write a book. You got to write a book. You have a very different voice. You don't write like anybody else. And I kept saying, no, 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 no. There's a million books out there. Why do we need another book? Finally, he said, okay, you care about this. How many women can you talk to at a time when you go speak someplace? I go, very proudly. I said, oh, like 300. And he goes, exactly. That's nothing. And I went, what? He said, books multiply your mission, what you care about. So when he finally said that, I realized it's not about me writing a book. It's about me getting this thing I care deeply about out to more people. So that is what started it. And I love writing. I've got to get back at it. I'm in the middle of thinking about my third book now. And so, yeah, I love doing it.
I was looking at your books earlier. I think I'm going to pick up a copy of each for Christmas for my mom and girlfriend.
Oh, good. Yes. Awesome. Thank you, Jason. I'd love to actually send them to them. So we'll email me later and I'll send them to them as my gift.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Send it to you and you give it to them.
But before John gets us back on track business-wise, I have to ask you, because you were on another show that I liked, and that was Saved by the Bell, The College Years.
That was fun. I was hoping that would turn into a recurring thing, and they actually intimated that it might, but it never did.
Sadly, it got canceled after the first season, but...
Yeah. Oh, that's why it didn't happen. Okay, well, I feel better.
Jason, you're the bearer of good news.
People didn't like the I don't want to say more serious aspect of it, but them being older, people just did not. Yeah. I was like the only person in my school that I knew that tuned in every night to watch it because I loved everything about Saved by the Bell, still do.
Yeah, I did too. And I loved the creator of that show. But I do think you're right. I think getting a little older with the skewing of the older characters just didn't happen. I don't know.
Well, my last question, and then we're going to wrap things up by talking about where folks can get in touch with you and what they can keep an eye on for when you have new stuff coming out. But you just made a directorial debut this past year, correct?
I did. I'm so excited. It's a feature film. Mm-hmm. That I co-directed called Damaged Goods. And it's in collaboration with a small liberal arts university in Kentucky called Asbury University. They have a very fine film school. I did one of their films several years ago, and they invited me to come back and co-direct with one of their recent graduates that they felt like could need, you know, someone to co-direct with them. So we did it. It's a fabulous movie, to tell you the truth. It is, we've already gotten international, global distribution, which I'm very excited about. And we've got some film festival awards. So, got best picture, best feature film at the Knoxville Film Festival. And then we're finalists for two festivals that will announced in 2022, but we are on the finalist last five movies for best feature film. I'm really proud of it. It's not easy subject matter, but it's very poignant and very important subject matter.
So do you have any other directorial projects in the works?
There's something that's pending, but we're waiting for funding and we're waiting for the script to be finalized. It's a period Western piece that would be really fun to do. But I'm producing, which I'm very excited about. I'm part of the production team. I'm associate producer of the new worldwide stage musical of the Four Tops. You guys are way too young to even know about the Four Tops. It's one of Motown's great, great bands from the day.
I know who the Four Tops are.
Yeah, I do too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we're doing a stage musical of the formation of the Four Tops, how they came together as this wonderful band of brothers, and it's utilizing all the great music from the show, from their repertoire, those iconic songs from Motown, including several new songs. So I'm one of the producers on that project, so it's keeping me quite busy.
All right. Well, let's kind of wrap things up. Let everybody know, Nancy, where they can keep tabs on you to find out about when your next project's coming out or when the new book is coming out or anything along those lines. Would you like to plug your website, social media, and whatnot?
Oh, thank you. Website, nancystafford.com. And I'm like the world's worst social media person, but I am on Facebook. So just Nancy Stafford. And I think I am on Instagram. I've got followers, which is so kind because I don't do a thing. I've got to start doing something to satisfy these followers. Anyway, I think it's at Nancy CA, Nancy Stafford CA. I think that's me. Oh my goodness. Well, you'll see my face and you'll know it's me. So anyway.
Well, Nancy, thank you so very much for taking some time out of your schedule to sit down today and chat with Jason and I. And thank you to all the fans who sent in questions. Hopefully we answer them all or Nancy answer them all for you. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. And thanks to all of your fans too for joining us. This has been like a big party and I'm really grateful. So thanks for having me guys.
Thank all you right. so much.
And thanks for what you do. And thanks for loving the show. It makes me so happy.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Taylor and myself sitting down and chatting with Nancy Stafford. And we learned a lot about Matlock, and it was a pleasure talking to Nancy. And even though that was a couple of years ago, I thought it would be a fun episode to revisit. And also a quick way to let you all know that if you're not listening to Matt Talk, you should be. Jason and I, every other week, we sit down and watch an episode of Matlock, and then we review it and we discuss it, and sometimes we poke fun at it as well. It's an awesome podcast that you definitely don't want to miss. It's available wherever you find podcasts, and you can even watch the live streams on the PVDcast Facebook page, the Matt Talk Facebook page, the Three Geeks Podcast Facebook page. We're on Twitch, we're on YouTube. We got all kinds of outlets for Matt Talk. All you got to do is just go to Facebook, go to at Matt Talk Podcast, and you'll get all of the information that you need to check out an episode or two. All right, maybe you really love this episode and you want to let me know about it. Well, let me tell you how you can get in touch with me. First off, you can email me if you like. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook, Threads, and Instagram. Just look for at PVDcast. And believe it or not, I'm still on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. Maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear the PVDcast. Well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get every single episode of the PVDcast. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to the search bar and put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And since we're speaking of those outlets and apps, I need you to do a favor for me. I need you to rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And it's super important to those apps and those outlets that are hosting podcasts, as well as it's important to me. So just give me as many stars as you think that I deserve. And give me a little write-up as well. You don't have to write a lot. Just, you know, enjoyed the show. That would be great. Or this is an awesome podcast. Whatever you want to write. But hey, while we're talking about those apps and outlets, let's make sure that we subscribe so that we never miss an episode of the PVDcast.
But there's a third way you can check out every single episode of the PVDcast, and that is on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a live broadcast with the week's episode. So there you go. There's three ways to get the PVDcast in your ears. First, PVDcast.com. Secondly, your favorite podcasting app or outlet. And thirdly, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Facebook page at PVDcast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.